It's time for Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss, and I'm really delighted to be bringing you another edition of Talking Animals, in which we'll be speaking with author Garth Stein, with the wonderfully wise and philosophical dog Enzo, who's the storyteller, in Stein's terrific new novel, The Art of Racing in the Rain. First, though, as always, we're kicking off the show with an animal tune. This is David Grisman with a piece called Dog's Bowl here on Talking Animals. This is David Grisman with a piece called Dog's Bowl, an animal tune of sorts, as we ease into today's edition of Talking Animals. My name's Duncan Strauss, here with our program that is devoted to all subjects in the animal kingdom. More information about the show and past guests, as well as archives and iTunes podcasts, I invite you to visit our website, talkinganimals.net. In just a few moments, we'll be speaking with today's guest, Garth Stein, author most recently of The Art of Racing in the Rain, terrific new novel told from the standpoint of a wonderfully wise and philosophical dog named Enzo. Find out more about Enzo, about the book, about Stein himself when Garth Stein joins us in a few moments here on Talking Animals. And as usual, we'll also welcome your questions and comments at 813-239-9663 or by email at dj@wmnf.org. Want to hit a quick animal news item or announcement from the Animal Coalition of Tampa. I want to tell you about their Trapper Tuesday, which they're offering a $10 spay or neuter surgeries for feral, that is unowned free-roaming cats, every Tuesday in July. The price includes surgery, pain medication, rabies vaccination, and an ear tip to identify the cat as being fixed. So every Tuesday from July 1st, yesterday through the 31st at ACT. You can call 813-250-3900 for more information, or go to actampa.org. All right, let's step into the Talking Animals Comedy Corner, which involves animal-oriented comedy. Appropriately enough for today's guest, I suppose, this is Brian Regan with a piece called Dog Barking on today's Comedy Corner here on WMNF.
Why would a dog bark at 3 o'clock in the morning in your neighborhood? What is that all about? I'm not talking about when there's two dogs doing, you know, whatever they do. Sometimes you got two going at it, you know. Hey! Do you remember when we were chasing that cat? Yeah. You got him mixed up with a stick. Yeah. Yeah, I was thinking about that. That was fun. Yeah. I'm not talking about that. That's not what I'm talking about at all. I'm talking about when there's one dog, you know, doing a monologue like at 3 o'clock in the morning. What are they doing? I think they just go out on the porch at that hour and just go, hey, it's nice and quiet. Why don't I bark it up for no reason whatsoever? Home, 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 home. And then right when you think they're done, home, 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 home. The hell's the matter with you? I'm a dog. Barking. How do you argue with them? Wouldn't it be weird if people were like that for no reason? Like if some guy went out on his porch at 3 in the morning, nobody knows him. It's like new to the neighborhood, just goes out there, you know, hey! 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 Hey, you all right, man? Hey, hey, hey! Well, hey, that's it for me. Thank you all very much, folks.
All right, that's Dennis Regan. I mean, sorry, Brian Regan. His brother's also a comedian, so... I guess it makes sense I would make that mistake. But that's a piece called Dog Barking, taken from his album simply entitled Live. I'm Duncan Strauss. This is Talking Animals. Our website is talkinganimals.net, where not only all our past programs are archived, but most are now available as podcasts in iTunes. For example, our last show with Moby and the one before that with Janine Garofalo when we were celebrating our fifth year anniversary as of June. We also have a link to the Talking Animals MySpace. We're looking for friends, folks. There's a place to subscribe to our semi-monthly email newsletter so we can keep you posted on forthcoming guest program news and remind you when the next show will air right here on WMNF. That's all found on TalkingAnimals.net. It's nearly time to speak to today's guest, Garth Stein. So let me quickly outline a few important details about him. He's was at least a documentary filmmaker and is an author most recently of The Art of Racing in the Rain, a terrific new novel told from the standpoint of a wonderfully wise and philosophical dog named Enzo. And Enzo is a soulful, smart canine who laments his lack of opposable thumbs and firmly believes in reincarnation, at least his own. Enzo's chief human companion is race car driver Denny Swift. Perhaps we shouldn't get into any more details, at least until we meet Enzo's other human companion. So with a reminder that we invite you to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663 or emailing us at dj@wmnf.org. Let's welcome Garth Stein. Garth, are you there?
I am here.
Okay, great. Well, thanks for joining us today on Talking Animals, and appreciate it. And I think we might even have caught you in the middle of a family vacation. So if that's the case, we appreciate it all the more. So perhaps more than in most interviews you've done, given the focus of this show, I'd really like to talk about Enzo, perhaps in even obsessive detail. But I'd like to start about asking about the evolution of Enzo. Presumably this started as a seedling of an idea or maybe a few seedlings. Maybe you could sort of describe those Enzo seedlings and how you arrived at the decision to assign him this role.
Oh, yeah, sure. You know, I used to make documentary films, and about 10 years ago I saw a film out of Mongolia called State of Dogs, and it dealt with this idea that in Mongolia there's a belief that the next incarnation for a dog will be as a person. And
okay.
I thought, geez, that's really a terrific idea. One day I'm going to do something with that, but I had no idea what or when or how it would work. And then about 3 years ago, I went to a reading by the poet Billy Collins, and he read a poem he had written called The Revenant, which is words from the dead, and it was told from the perspective of a dog who'd recently been euthanized. And it starts like this. This is the dog you put to sleep, as you like to call the needle of oblivion. Come back to tell you one thing. I never liked you, not one bit. And it was very funny, but it was in a huge auditorium with a huge audience, and it was just hysterical. The reaction was just hysterical, because it was a very funny, and this dog had a big chip on his shoulder. And I thought at that moment the light bulb started going off. You know, it's like, wow, I'll tell the idea of a dog reincarnating as a person, but I'll tell it from the dog's point of view. So Enzo is a little more kindly and sympathetic and perhaps a little bit wiser than Billy Collins' dog. But still, the idea was hatched from there.
Okay, well, cool. Well, and one of the things that makes Enzo and the book, I think, so special is that he is deeply philosophical. I mean, if only to maybe match you a passage for a passage, I just want to briefly read maybe something that just, you know, we're barely in the book. I think it's 18 pages. Yeah, 18 pages. And Enzo at one point says, you know, because he's, for people who haven't had a chance to read the book yet, sort of an autodidact, largely by watching TV. And, you know, of course, he's learned a lot from his human companion, Denny. But he's talking about some of the TV that he's watched. And he says, they talk a lot about Darwin. Pretty much every educational channel has some kind of show about evolution at some point, and it's usually really well thought out and researched. However, I don't understand why people insist on pitting the concepts of evolution and creation against each other. Why can't they see that spiritualism and science are one? The bodies evolve and souls evolve, and the universe is a fluid place that marries them both in a wonderful package called a human being. What's wrong with that idea? Not bad for a dog.
Well, he tries to stay contemporary with discussions of theology and science.
Well, yeah, absolutely. So, you know, I mean, I guess, you know, among the other things about Enzo that's kind of unusual, he's very controlled. He explains, for instance, how he's endeavored to kind of squelch the instinct to chase prey so that he's safe with Zoe, the little girl in the family. I mean, at the same time, in his expressions and attitudes, he periodically seems kind of just like a regular dog. I mean, there's times where, you know, if a dog, regular dog could type, where he's just saying, you know, I like that very much. You can almost see the happy dog with the tail
right.
wagging furiously. So I guess, was there a lot of trial and error to arrive at kind of Enzo's sensibility, that mix of human and canine traits?
You know, not really. The book, the voice of Enzo came to me very quickly. I ended up writing the first draft of the book in 4 months, which is extremely fast for me. And I could write it that fast because really the voice spoke to me. You know, the idea was, you take a soul and make it almost human, but not quite. It just doesn't have a human body. And so he has all these experiences and the physicality of a dog, and he sees things and smells things through a dog's nose, through a dog's eyes. And yet I wanted him to be perceptive enough to be able to take in information and learn from it. What I think was the fun part for me was that, you know, if all we learned was from television, which is really not a dialogue, it's a monologue. The television talks to you; you don't get to talk back to it, and so there's no real give and take in the discussion. And I think that's where we really, as people, learn a lot is through a two-way discussion, not through a one-way discussion. And so that's why, and sometimes Enzo gets wrapped up in his theories that are basically misinterpretations of something that's gone on the television. And so, because he hasn't had a chance to clarify it, it has this kind of naivete that you're talking about.
Right, and of course, you know, to his great frustration, because there's times where he says, you know, there's things that are significant. Again, we don't want to give too much away about the story, that he either discovers early on that no one else is aware of, or just otherwise, and he's, you know, so frustrated that he just doesn't have the tongue, doesn't have the ability to articulate those things, and so some of those you know, viewpoints or things he would have arrived at would have gotten a maybe a more proper airing, I suppose, but also we'd have a very different story on our hands. So.
Right, well, yeah.
Yeah, but I guess given this sort of the grappling, I mean, you know, you know, he's got this personality, he's really kind and compassionate, but if someone's kind of a jerk or a phony, he can really sort of project an edge, like, you know, in recounting the actions of the twins or even just invoking that phrase. So, I mean,
yeah.
I don't know if that was kind of fun to sort of arrive at, you know, he's not just kind of a, you know, a cool philosophical guy. He's, you know, I mean.
Well, yeah, he doesn't pull his punches. And,
yeah.
You would never accuse Enzo of being passive aggressive, that's for sure.
Right. Yeah.
He loves who he loves with his full heart, and he dislikes those who he dislikes with his full, whatever the opposite of your heart is.
Absolutely. Well, let me just let folks know, this is Talking Animals on WMNF. If you just joined us, we're speaking with Garth Stein, author of the new novel, The Art of Racing in the Rain. If you'd like to join the conversation and ask Garth a question, please call 813-239-9663 or email us at dj@wmnf.org. You know, to what extent, Garth, I'd be curious, you know, how much of Enzo is you and how much represents maybe the idealized you?
That's a good question. I mean, as a writer, I personally feel that, you know, I find myself in all the characters, parts of me. So, you know, there's that. The idealized me, well, I'm not sure that there's much, you know, Enzo's voice is really kind of pure and singular for me, and I'm not actually sure I can answer that question without quite a few years of, you know, psychotherapy.
Wow. Okay. Well, in our limited time here on the air, I guess we'll have to sort of come back to that another time then. But yeah, I just felt like, you know, again, given the components you talked about at the beginning of sort of where the idea for Enzo and the
yeah,
art of race
well,
and the
race
came together.
Yeah, well, the idea of race, you know, the background is race car driving, of the backdrop of the story is.
Mm-hmm.
And Denny, who is Enzo's master, is a semi-professional race car driver, and he's always hustling and trying to get his next ride, and he works at a kind of an upscale auto repair shop in Seattle's Capitol Hill and has his day job. And he always has his eye to the track. And that character is really based on a very dear friend of mine named Kevin York, who basically fits that description. Semi-pro driver, has a family, worked at a high upscale auto repair shop, etc. So that kind of backdrop and stuff came from me. I have had racing experiences myself. I raced for a few years up here in the Northwest, and in fact, I'm going to be racing for Mazda in this Mazda Grand Prix of Portland that's coming up, which is kind of a treat to be able to get back on the track. But I never mistook myself for a enthusiastic amateur, you know.
Yeah.
As opposed to, I don't have goals for loftier things like Formula One. So.
Right, I got you. Well, look, we got a few calls here, Garth. Let's see if we can take one and see if some other folks would like to talk to you about Enzo.
Sure.
Hi, you're on the WMNF with Garth Stein on Talking Animals. Hello. Oh, okay. I guess they're gone. We'll get them back. So, Garth, I guess given those things, I'd be curious to know, at what points along the way as you were writing this and then sort of, you know, obviously it came quickly, but did you have sort of internal debates about whether the storytelling approach was, you know, either too adventurous or whether enough people would get it, quote-unquote? I think I read something relevant about, you know, when you did complete it and sort of handed it off to, well, I guess what's now a former agent, you know, I'd just be curious to sort of see how that all went, but also how you thought about it along the way as you were creating it.
Yeah, I kind of always had confidence in the voice because I just felt there was something fun and almost magical about Enzo's storytelling. So I really didn't have any problem. You know, Gabriel Garcia Marquez, the great writer from Brazil, he once said, you can ask your reader to give you one thing, like one big thing. Like, for instance, I can ask the reader to say, okay, come with me and believe that a dog can narrate a book. I can't do two things. I can't say, and also he can fly a helicopter.
Right.
I can't keep adding things, but I can ask for one, can ask for one, and
sure,
people will give me that. So I kind of I kind of believed that people would go with it. Of course, as you said, my former agent decided not to go with it. He said that he couldn't get over the fact that dogs don't really think. And I said, you probably don't own a dog. And then I said, you're fired. So I ended up finding an agent who is really fantastic and knew exactly what I was trying to get at and worked with me to make it work.
And let me just let people know, too, Garth, that although this is intended to be a call-in show and lots of people are calling in, apparently we're having trouble with our phone system. So if you are at a computer and listening and have a chance to email those questions, that would be great because it's kind of frustrating. There's been several calls, and we haven't been able to get any of them on the line to speak with you, Garth. So if anybody out there is able to email to dj@wmnf.org, then we'd be happy to incorporate your questions. That sounds kind of like the way that biz goes, and I guess even you know, furthermore, sort of along those lines, you know, someone, you know, about the storytelling someone close to me was sort of I don't know if put off is too strong, but just sort of, you know, bothered, I guess, by the episode of Enzo and the squirrel. But to me, it made perfect sense if I truly understood Enzo. I mean, again, without giving anything away, wasn't he simply just devastated by grief and anger? So at that moment, all his unusual canine control was shattering. I mean, it was just sort of temporary insanity.
Yeah, that was the idea. I mean, when something very emotional happens that's very close to you, I mean, people do that sort of thing all the time. I mean, it's kind of a natural reaction. To the fact that, you know, the natural reaction for Enzo is to totally revert to his dogness, to lose himself in his dogness, I think shows his frustration with the, you know, with his inability to affect the world around him as he would like to do. So, yeah, I mean, I understand that there's a certain brutality to a chapter in there, but I think that it's justifiable given the context of the narrative.
Sure, sure, absolutely. And I guess back to sort of the agent, you know, discussion. I mean, has Hollywood come calling? I mean, having spent some time in, you know, at least the periphery of showbiz, I can imagine, if so, some of the conversations. But first, I'd just be curious to know what kind of, you know.
Well, interestingly, no. Hollywood has not called at all.
Hmm.
Part of it was an issue with the, you know, it's the Starbucks summer pick. So it's being sold in all the Starbucks across the country for the whole summer. Because of that deal, because of the kind of the nature of the way they do it, we weren't allowed to shop the book around until it was actually on the bookshelves. So, therefore, there's a little bit of a delay. Hollywood is a weird and fickle place. Right now they're dealing with, you know, Actors Guild strikes possible, and they just had a writer's strike. So people are a little, I think, gun-shy right now in Hollywood. Mm-hmm. But, you know, look, if someone wants to make it into a movie, I think that would be fun. It's not something that I would want to get involved with, like, oh, write the script or something. I think it would need a fresh set of eyes. Because, frankly, I'm hung up. Like, would I rather have Scooby-Doo play Enzo or, like, Benji?
Right.
I hear Lassie is totally booked, so.
Well, and you know, it's funny, because as I was sort of thinking about this question, I could only imagine, again, having spent some time at least on the outer edges of showbiz, that if they had, or even if there still would be a meeting, you know, it'd be something like, you know, so Garth, to make this work as a film, we might need to tweak things a little. What if Enzo was a man, but looked like an Airedale? You know, I mean, that's just kind of... But anyways, we do have an email question from some of the folks who weren't able to get through by phone, and one of those is, like, wants to ask you about the zebra.
Oh, nice question. There you go. Yes, the zebra is kind of Enzo's nemesis. The zebra is this stuffed animal that belongs to Zoe, the little girl in the family, and in the darkest hours, sometimes the zebra comes to life to torment poor Enzo, and it's kind of a ongoing motif that goes throughout the book, and it gets resolved at the end where Enzo realizes what the zebra really is. I don't want to give that away,
right? Of course,
there is some really fun scenes. When I do readings, I like to read the zebra dancing scene, because it's a real kind of a crowd pleaser to imagine a little stuffed zebra running around the house, wrecking havoc is kind of fun.
For sure. Well, again, you know, since we're sort of near the end of our time, Garth, and I know a lot of people were going to call in, and in fact, there's a local bookstore, Inkwood, who had your book as one of the picks, and so they were delighted to hear that, you know, a few weeks ago when I said that you were going to be a guest on the show. So let me ask a few things that might well be the kind of things that, or say a few things, just because, again, I hope it's clear by now, I absolutely, you know, love the book. My wife, who's the sort of proverbial prolific reader, came back from a business trip and said, "You gotta read this book." All she said was, it's a cool dog that, you know, is bummed he doesn't have opposable thumbs, believes in reincarnation, and, you know, I cried a couple times, and you gotta read it. So I picked it up, flipped through a few pages. I couldn't be bothered by any family emergency or anything else for like the next, you know, 24 hours. And then, you know, I got an email from someone who knew that they were going to be a guest, said the same thing. When they got to the end, another sign of a really great book. everybody blasted through, including myself, and then all we wanted to do was read, like, a page at the time. It's like, hey, we do not want this cool book to end. I mean, it's just really...
That's so nice of you to say.
Yeah, I mean, it's just this... And the thing, I guess, too, that is another product that I think of a great book slash great character is I still... And this was, you know, Memorial Day, part of Memorial Day weekend. I still think about Enzo. I mean, do you, as his ultimate kind of human companion, still think about Enzo?
Yeah. Yeah, I do. I mean, it's funny. I've got a 12-year-old, a 9-year-old, and a 1-year-old. And like you said, we're right now. I just wanted to take a few days. I've been on the road for quite a bit.
Yeah.
And kind of missing my family. So we took off to the Great Wolf Water Park down here in Chehalis, Washington. And it's just something that sometimes Enzo says things and has said things in the book that I wrote that I don't even understand exactly where they come from. But you know, it's this idea of unconditional love for our family, making sure that we treat each other as, you know, with gently. And a lot of times we expect too much from the people around us, and because of our expectations, we tend to get frustrated. I wanted you to do this. You should have done this. Why did you do that to me? And there's a lot of projecting what we want onto other people, especially with our family members. And if we had fewer expectations for other people's behaviors and we just worried about our own behavior, I just think, for me, that's something that I strive for, especially now since I've been away from my family a lot. And when I come home, I want to make sure that I'm not distracted or worried about business or something like that. I want to be able to be fully connected with them. And so sometimes little things from Enzo creep into my ear, and I say,
sure.
Don't act like that.
Yeah, well, that's cool. I'm not surprised that even Enzo's sort of creator feels that way, because I think he's just somebody who really stays with you in that way. And so, and again, I appreciate, now that we are pretty much at the end of our time here, Garth, that's not everything else. Oh, on a family getaway from all the book signings and tours, here you are doing an interview about the book. But I appreciate the time.
My kids absolutely love it. I mean,
yeah, okay.
they're proud.
Yeah.
I'm on the New York Times bestseller list, and they tell everyone, even every waitress at every restaurant we go into.
Sure, why not? They're some of your best publicists, probably. Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Well, again, Garth, thank you so much. The name of the book, one more time, is The Art of Racing in the Rain, with the great character Enzo the Dog telling the story. And, you know, you can get it pretty much anywhere, as Garth alludes to, on the New York Times bestseller list. Great reviews pretty much everywhere that I've seen them, at least, and rightly so. And you can check out more either online by The Art of Racing in the Rain or by Garth Stein. And thanks again for making time, and especially in the middle of a little family getaway.
Oh, hey, my pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. Good luck with the book. It's really, really a fantastic one.
All right. Thanks a lot.
All right. Thank you.
Take care.
All right. Okay. I'm Duncan Strauss. You're listening to Talking Animals, where the show website is talkinganimals.net. Again, sorry, all you folks who called in trying to... ask Garth. I knew there was a lot of interest beforehand, so it's a shame that we are having those kind of phone problems. But thanks for the one folks who were able to switch gears and email in. And but again, it's The Art of Racing in the Rain by Garth Stein. Anyways, the website is talkinganimals.net, which I hope you'll visit to sign up for our email newsletter, subscribe to our podcast, check out our MySpace. We're looking for friends just like you. And of course, you can make suggestions for future guests and topics or more. That's all found at talkinganimals.net. It's time to proceed to name that animal tune. There'll be a prize, not coincidentally perhaps, a copy of The Art of Racing in the Rain, to the first person who calls in at 813-239-9633. I'm gonna probably have to email in, now that I think about it. I'm sorry. Once again, our phone thing probably won't allow you to call in for me to answer it, at least on the air. So if the first person who emails in at dj@wmnf.org with correctly identifying this animal tune will win a copy of The Art of Racing in the Rain. It's Name That Animal Tune on WMNF. Hi, you're on WMNF. Any chance, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Oh, wow. Of course, right after we lose Garth, but that's okay.
I'd love the book.
Oh, great. What's your first name?
Genevieve, Genevieve.
Okay, cool. I'll come back and get your info in a sec, but what's your answer to the quiz question?
Oh, I didn't hear the quiz question.
Oh, no. Okay, you got to identify this animal tune that's playing right now.
Oh, hold on.
Okay, I got to go, Genevieve. We're almost out of time. Sorry, one more. Here, you know what? You stay on hold. I'm going to send you a book, too. Hold on.
Okay.
Hi, you're on WMNF. You know the answer.
Oh, what was the question?
The name of the animal tune that's playing right now.
Oh.
Okay. Hi, you're on WMNF. You know the name of the animal tune. Hi, you're on WMNF. You know the name of the tune? Name of the animal tune?
Hello?
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 Hi, can you name that animal tune?
Birdland.
There you go.
No,
what's your name?
I wasn't doing that. I guess I didn't dial the main number. I'm sorry. What's the main number?
I'm sorry, your name again?
Marianne.
Marianne. Okay, Marianne, I'm going to put you on hold, too, and get your information. Congratulations. Thanks for listening.
Thank you.
All right, we have just about reached the end of Talking Animals. We'll be back next Wednesday, July 9th. We're on the first two Wednesdays of each month. It is talkinganimals.net for all kinds of info. Sign up for our email newsletter. And unfortunately, we're sort of more out of time than I'd like, but we have a local animal song. This is the creation of Clearwater musicians Joel Melizia and Jeremy Douglas to take us out to the end of the show. It's I Love My Dog right here on WMNF Tampa. Thanks. We'll catch you next Wednesday.
No matter what your canine tastes, she wants us to be with me. Look at my dog. She looks so pretty in her tiny shirt. She's so crazy. She's a hairy squirt. All she wants is to be with me. I love my dog.